Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean.
Welcome back to the Jeff Plour Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. 251-343-0106 if you want to be in touch with the program. Hit us up there. Joining us now, as promised, a friend of the program, always makes time for the show when he can, but he is the chairman of the Education Trust Fund Committee in the House of Representatives in Montgomery, and he's a lawmaker who represents Trustville, Jefferson County. State Representative Danny Garrett is with us. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. How are you doing? I'm doing great.
Doing well. Thanks for coming on. Before we get into kind of the meat and potatoes here, how has the off season been going? It seems like it's picked up here in the last few weeks as we head to the 2024 session, but maybe not quite as busy as that interim period a year earlier.
Well, this is the time of year when there's a lot of conferences and meetings and things, so we've been pretty busy on things like that. Of course, a lot of events in the community we're in touch with and visiting schools and meeting with a number of people. And of course, as a budget chair, I have a lot of meetings scheduled with people in advance of the session who are kind of weighing in on their desires and trying to get a feel for how they should request and what the expectation should be going forward with the budget. So it's pretty busy. And then also a lot of family thing. One thing I'll mention just as a little plug here as a proud papa. My oldest son was invited back on Jeopardy. He was on the show in March, and we went out to for the airing of the second show a couple weeks ago. So it will air on December 20th. So anybody's a Jeopardy fan, watch for Coach Jake Garrett on December 20th on Jeopardy.
Yeah, well, I'll absolutely be watching for that December 20th. Well, I hope it ends well for him. Representative, let's start here, and we're about 2 months or some change into the grocery tax cut. The early indicators are, yes, it has indeed shown diminished the amount going into coffers of the education budget. Kind of give us your assessment of how that rollout has gone thus far.
Yeah, so it, of course, took place pretty much, I guess, September the 1st, and the 1 cent reduction. And the first couple of months data we've shown is that the fiscal impact was slightly less than what they had expected, what we had expected from the fiscal office. So we'll see if that settles out or, you know, where that goes. But of course, that's half of the decrease annually that we projected. That would be about $150 million for that one half. The additional cent that will take place eventually would be another $150 million. So I think we'll be getting close to $300 million impact going forward. Of course, the budget growth has slowed. So we actually see that, but we're still in good shape fiscally. And right now, after the first couple of months, it looks like that fiscal impact from the grocery tax cut might be not quite as much as we thought, but we'll wait and see.
Well, and to trigger the next phase of the grocery tax, right, cut, that you have to hit a certain a threshold. Are we anywhere close to the growth needed? Or what needs to happen, do you think?
Revenue would need to grow 3.5%. So the next time that happens, and right now we're pretty flat. Looks like the revenue growth so far into this fiscal year has been pretty flat compared to last year. So we would need another period of modest growth. And as you recall, when the food bill was first put forth by Lieutenant Governor, it was a 4-year phase in, 0.5% per year. And of course, we modified that to where we took one tranche up front, the 1 cent. And then the second will happen when there's that budget growth. So, it's still possible, but, the economic situation is a little bit uncertain right now.
Well, and then that's something we've been talking about a lot. In 2022 or 2023, the uncertainty of the economy, and you had a surplus. There was a lot of uncertainty or a lot of indecisiveness early on. What should we do with it? Should we save it? Because we know economic bad times are coming. I mean, I'm sure you have economic forecasts that you're keeping track of. And the state of Alabama is not necessarily going to be the same as the rest of the country. Kind of where do you think the state economy is right now?
Well, I guess it's kind of a complex answer to that. And one, yeah, we are one of the lower cost states in the country, probably the second lowest, maybe the lowest tax state when you look at everything on a per capita basis. So our revenue per capita is lower than most. So we have, but we've been modifying our tax structure to kind of make it better. And we've reduced taxes the last several sessions, and I think we'll probably see some additional reductions going forward. The one thing we have done, though, has been very disciplined in our spending. Because of all the influx of money that's coming to the state, you know, that drives a formula for how much money we can spend for the budget. And we have intentionally over the past 3 years not spent to the cap, not spent all the money we could spend. We also last year, as you know, put in another tranche of savings account that is really the control of the legislature, which we can access without having to go through a proration process. So all that being said, we have, I think, been very fiscally responsible in our budgeting. Our budget, our revenue has grown, our budgets have grown, but our savings have grown, at a greater rate. And so when you look at any analysis that's been put forth by Moody's, some of the other national organizations, Standard & Poor's, Alabama is very well positioned to weather a moderate recession should that happen. So I think, though, that speaks more to our disciplined approach and our spending and the fact that we have intentionally now saved money. You know, when I went down to the legislature 9 years ago, it was flipped. You know, we had the opposite view. We were always scrambling around for money. We're at a point now where I think we've been wise and prudent in how we budgeted, and not spending every dollar you have benefits us in times like this. We just have to maintain the discipline. And of course, we also put in a measure last year that would limit the growth in the budget every year. Right now, this year, it could grow, I think it's 6.5%, maybe 6.25%. I can't remember the number exactly. But that will step down to eventually the maximum budget growth we could have would be 5.75%, no matter what the revenue was. So it's good fiscal responsibility in the way we're budgeting right now.
Well, and it's kind of fascinating to watch how it's playing out. And, like, you know, I grew up in Alabama, and I remember the days of being in public schools and proration and really, like, you know, where your public school made certain cuts or whatever to finish out the school year, because those days are long gone now.
Right. Well, the proration, the way it works is, you know, because of the way the fiscal year works, you don't, you know, you start the school year, say, in August. You find out in January that the revenue is 10% lower than what you thought. So you have to make up for that from January forward. So you end up cutting the back end of the school year by 20% to get to that 10% reduction. And that just created havoc in the schools. And so, you know, we're past that with the Rolling Reserve Act. We've done some other modifications to address that. And I think those days are behind us. And that's good. And of course, one thing you mentioned, schools, one thing that's one of the governor's top priorities, Lieutenant Governor's been talking about it for a while, and it'll be a legislative priority, is some school choice legislation. And of course, that will have some impact to the budget, to the revenue, the education budgets. But that will be a priority of the legislature. It's a governor's priority, as I said. And, I think we'll see some school choice legislation, that would be similar, probably better than what we've seen in most other states. So that is another item there. And again, in addition to that, which would be, you know, would be a decline in the revenue to the current public school system. We don't want to hamper the public schools, so we're looking at some things there too to also enhance what we can do to improve the public school performances and outcomes as well. So I think you'll continue to see us do fiscally responsible budgeting. We're still going to look for ways to reduce taxes, although, again, we are one of the lower tax states in the country. We'll continue to do things like that and make Alabama a very attractive place for businesses to come, which we've had great success in attracting industry. Lieutenant Governor has this 21st Century Workforce Commission, which is looking, what can we do now in the 21st century and the future to grow and to attract more businesses and to retain students here. The speaker has got an ad hoc committee looking at labor participation. And all those things are really important. And if we can properly address those, then we can make the position of state for some the best fiscal and financial years we've ever had.
Well, and you mentioned school choice, and this is what I think a lot of people may not understand. The misconception here, and I don't know if it's a misconception, maybe it's just an incorrect assumption, that today we have a system that we have in place, and tomorrow we could go to school choice, and you could just give money to parents, and they can go do whatever, and there's no impact. There's no, but there has to be at least some element of overhead to administer a school choice program. That it's not cost neutral, I guess. That there will be associated costs for the state to do some kind of school choice, and that's where you're trying to get here in a responsible way.
Well, the way I look at it is, you know, if you look at every area of my life, the way I shop, the way I go out to eat, the way I make reservations, the way you take trips, the way you everything, the way we do is evolved and changed. And there's so many different ways to do it. But yet in education, we're kind of stuck into that one model, that one mindset. And that has to evolve like the rest of the world has evolved. So I think that school choice is an element. Now, some people really don't understand what it is and what it's not. You can look at other states that have implemented it. It's been around for 20 years, but it hasn't really taken a foothold really until recently. But we can see what's happening, what's working. And the bottom line is we want to improve education outcomes in the state. And that involves, and then school choice can be one of the tools in the toolbox. We have the Accountability Act, which does a lot of good in the state and provides for some of those students that really need something other than the traditional public school program. But there are a lot of different ways to look at this on an out-of-the-box, innovative approach. And my view is you take the education model just like you take every business model that's out there, and we need to adapt to where we are today. So I welcome the opportunity to address that to improve the education outcomes in the state.
Well, and I, you know, I'm a school choice skeptic to some degree that it is a one size fits all solution, and not that I'm necessarily against it, but why do we have a sense that you will really see an improvement in education by implementing a school choice program? I mean, is the data out there, what you see in other states, do you feel confident about that?
Well, first of all, I think you can't be one size fits all. I think that's why you've got to look at what other states have done that have, because you don't want to just transfer money from people, you know, from one group to another and not have any, and leave behind people who really need that help. So yes, there is data to show where school choice can be most effective in improving student outcomes. Now, some people take the position that it's all just about parents' rights, so parents should be able to decide up front, and that's the end all. But the problem is we don't have that opportunity in throughout the state. We don't have parental involvement throughout the state. So I think the goal of school choice, to me, is to improve education opportunities and outcomes for children in the state. And certainly parents' choice is part of that, and we want to give parents more flexibility, but we can't do that at the expense of those that are in those systems that are just so poor and underfunded. And, you know, other states have looked at how they funded education. Again, we haven't changed our funding model in the state of Alabama for how we fund education since 1996. So I think it's time that we, you know, revisit that as well, and just get into the 21st century and try to drive outcomes. So, yeah, I think that there is data, and we're looking at that data. I know the governor's office has spent a lot of time. We've had a lot of the good news is there's a lot of conferences we've been able to attend and go to get just a lot of data. And we see what's working and what's not working. There are a lot of sound bites out there that people want to throw out and say, here's what, but you have to look at the data and the outcome, and that's where we're focused.
Well, let's talk about the sort of economics of it. If you and I look at Obamacare, where, say, for example, you have a quasi free market healthcare system, and then the next day the government starts subsidizing health care, and they're paying for people's health insurance. Suddenly more people are on the health insurance roll. Well, it costs health insurance to go up. The cost of getting medicine and medical care to go up. Do you think that if you implement a school choice system, the private school structure in this state, I mean, does demand go up? Does it, you know, if you're an existing customer of a private school system, does your tuition go up? I mean, all these unintended consequences, are they even a concern?
Well, I think the reality is, and, you know, again, this is a complicated subject, so I'm going to kind of speak, you know, generally, but there may be a lot more layers to the discussion. But you know, the reality is that the $7,000, if that's the number, $6,900, whatever it is, that a lot of people that would move from the state to an ESA account for a student, you know, is not going to cover private tuition in a lot of the schools. So even that would not allow people to go to private schools necessarily if their private schools exist. The other thing, you do have private schools. You know, you can look at what happens if you just arbitrarily raise the minimum wage. Well, does that mean that other wages on top of that don't go up? Does that drive an increase in the other wages rates? Same thing. If you provide this money, does that increase the cost of private tuition? You know, that's a possibility. But in reality, the way these school choice bills work, private schools would have the opportunity to determine if they're a participating school or not. And many of the private schools would choose not to participate because we don't want the government now to get into the private school business and start telling private schools what they must do. So there's some technicalities there and some details that have to preserve, you know, people's ability to have choices, the protection of school people who've already made choices, but also give opportunity again to students who don't have an adequate education. What can we do to give them opportunity? So, you know, one size doesn't fit all. You don't want to have a system where people game the system, but you also want to have a system where schools may choose to participate or not. And I don't think we're looking at any legislation that would force a private school to have to be part of this.
Representative, we're out of time, Representative, but you, like I said, you're always very kind to come on this program when we have this discussion. Hopefully we catch up again real soon.
Absolutely. Merry Christmas, Jeff, and to you and all your listeners.
Merry Christmas to you as well. State Representative Danny Garrett there. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
I've nothing to do. It's good to see you. I must go. I know.